Hey guys, coming up today on Sports Spectrum, Justin Davis. He played college basketball back in the day at Lincoln Christian University. He was an All-American basketball player, the third all-time leading scorer. He was inducted into their Hall of Fame. He was a pretty good basketball player. After basketball, after college, he went into ministry. He went through a really difficult season of life with his marriage and ultimately ended up writing a book about it. In 2012, 2013, he wrote the best-selling marriage book with his wife, Tricia. It was called Beyond Ordinary, When Good Marriage Just Isn't Good Enough. And I read that book 10 years ago. I just recently got another copy because I need to read it again. I don't want just a good marriage. I want a great marriage. And Justin and Tricia, when they wrote that 10 years ago, were about as open and transparent about their trials and struggles that they walked through. So he wrote that book. He's been an author and a speaker. He's pastored churches. And now he's got another book 10 years later, almost like a bookend to that first book, called Being Real is Greater Than Being Perfect. Transparency Leading to Transformation. That's what we talk about. We talk about basketball too. But Justin shares a lot of what he's walked through these past few years. And I just love his heart for God and his heart to serve and help others. This is good. You're going to like this conversation with Justin Davis. It's coming up in just a moment here on Sports Spectrum. First, I want to tell you about our Sports Spectrum magazine. This is the time of year to order the Sports Spectrum magazine, and you want to do it soon because it's almost the holiday season. It's almost the holiday time. Christmas is almost here. If you're looking for a gift for someone who loves Jesus and loves sports, especially those kiddos that you're trying to introduce maybe a little bit more about Jesus into their lives because they're so obsessed with sports, well, consider getting the Sports Spectrum magazine. You go to sportspectrum.com, you click the magazine icon, and you can subscribe right now to a one-year subscription to Sports Spectrum's magazine. And you want to do it soon so that that gift can arrive in time for Christmas. And we have a little bonus for you, 15% off, 15% off a one-year subscription if you subscribe right now and you put in the code podcast15. If you put that code in, podcast15, you can save 15% off a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Order your subscription to Sports Spectrum's magazine today. Great to have Justin Davis here on Sports Spectrum, former Lincoln Christian University All-American basketball player. Hi, Justin.
I don't know how long it's been since I've been introduced like that, but I appreciate that. And I'm grateful that's not my claim to fame.
Right. Well, what's great is obviously best-selling author, you're a pastor, you're a husband and a dad, and you got a great story. But when I did my research and we were talking about your college career, I'm like, I'm going to introduce him that way because it's probably been maybe since you were in college that you were introduced that way. I don't know.
Yeah, I went into the Hall of Fame at the school probably about 10 years ago.
There you go.
And and so that, you know, my kids obviously weren't around when I was playing. And so they gave me like a plaque with my, you know, college face on it. And so I just basically just carried it around all day, just reminding them how good I was. So, but that's probably the last time anybody's ever acknowledged Justin Davis, All-American basketball player. So I appreciate that, Jason. I'm gonna put that as my ringtone on my phone.
Absolutely. I can record one that's much better than what I just did on the show if you want me to. Anytime, just call me. What's interesting is I don't care what level of college basketball you're playing, whether it's a small school. I know that Lincoln Christian is an NAIA, sort of NCCAA school. So it's a smaller school. It's not Division I Duke or North Carolina.
Right.
But you got to be good. I mean, I played community college basketball for one semester, my sophomore year of college. And people said, wow, that means you were pretty good. And I'm like, does it? And they're like, yeah. And once I got to community college basketball and I was playing, I saw, oh, these guys are much better than the high school level that I played. So for you to be an All-American, I don't care what level of college, that means you're a pretty good player. And you're a tall guy too, right? What, 6'6", 6'7"?
No, I wish. If I was 6'6", I would not have been an NAIA basketball player. I'm 6'3". I have a son that's 6'8".
Yes.
I have a son that's 6'8". But and so I have an older son who's 6'2", and so we both envy Isaiah's height.
Yeah, 6'8".
Because Micah played at Indiana Wesleyan, you know, where your daughter goes.
Sure.
And so, you know, he's like, Isaiah, if I was 6'8", I would have dominated at Indiana Wesleyan. But unfortunately, we, you know, I was a 6'3" guard back when 7-foot centers were a thing. You know right. what I mean? And so yeah. if you were 6'3", you had to be very, very good to play guard Division One, because they were, you know, very, I mean, the 3-point line came out my freshman year of high school. Mm-hmm. So, same. You know, the 3-pointer wasn't a part of strategy, you know, for very long when I was in college. And so I wish I played in this era, just because my skill set would have been much more highly valued than it was, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah. 6 foot three. I'm 6 foot one, and I played power forward in high school, in my high school, because our tallest guy was 6'2" that was playing. So we were a small team in high school. We both, I think, graduated in 91, if I'm thinking out loud here, because yep. I remember my freshman year of high school was the year the 3-point line came in too. And we did not shoot a lot of 3-pointers, if any, in my high school career. I always wanted to, but then I was considered a gunner if you shot a couple threes. And I'm like, now guys are shooting 20 threes a game. So I don't
Unbelievable.
Know.
Yeah, my freshman year, our coach said, if you shoot a three, I'm taking you out of the game.
Yeah.
And we had a guy, John Cummings. It was like, there was like 11 seconds left in like the second quarter, and he shot a three. And then the coach brought him out. I'm like, it was, you know, the end of the second quarter, give the guy a break.
I know.
But yeah, it was definitely not a thing back then, for sure.
So now we're both 50 years old, which I yes. thought was fascinating. I retired from my playing career, I want to say it was about 6-7 years ago. When I say retired, mm-hmm. it's not like I had a formal announcement. I just woke up one day and I said, wow, I just played basketball yesterday and everything hurts and I didn't get hurt. So I was really yeah. sore, and I'm like, I don't like this feeling anymore. So I stopped playing, and it was hard because I love to play basketball, especially in our church league the last few years. Are you still playing, or are you kind of
so
retired as well?
I retired due to injury.
Injury.
Yeah. So I missed about 18 games through my college career with ankle injuries, and almost a whole season, really. And so I've never really had good, you know, really strong ankles. And that was with getting taped every game, you know? So
yeah.
about 2 years ago, I was playing at a, you know, community center here in Indy I was actually playing with my two sons. So it was so, so fun. And, you know, being able to run up and down with your kids. And,
yeah.
And I was trying to show off and show them how high I could get. I went up to try to dunk it at like 46 years old. So this is like 4 years ago. And as I elevated, I twisted my ankle. And I mean, I thought I broke my leg, you know, off at the knee. It hurt so bad. And I just thought, okay, that's it for me. And so I, you know, I was on crutches for like 2 weeks, and, you know, people ask me, you know, what happened? Did you have surgery? No, I just injured myself playing basketball, trying to show off for my kids, you know? So I watch a lot of basketball now, and, you know, both of my kids played in college. And so, that's a huge passion of mine, sure. but, my playing days are over. I'll go out and play some horse and, you know, and just remind the kids who still has the touch.
Still got some game. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what's funny is
I have some trash talking game too. So
of course in my church league that we have now, I want to be a part of it, but I know if I play, I'm going to get hurt because of the way that I would play, and I would die for loose balls and think that I was Larry Bird and all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, you're 50 years old. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So I would referee. And that's what I do now, is I just referee the church league, and it gets me up and down. It gets me some steps. I'm hopefully not going to get hurt. Gosh, if I get hurt refereeing, what's wrong with me? But I love doing that and still being a part of it. So, I mean, that's what I do now. And I go for walks, Justin. You don't get hurt going for walks as long as the car sees you when you're, you know, when you're walking. So that's my exercise now. You know, it's a lot safer and not a lot of injuries happening that way.
I ran a couple half marathons over the years. I'm back on the treadmill now.
Okay.
I'm going to try to run the Indy Mini in next May. It's kind of my goal. I wanted to do it before I was 50, and just with some life circumstances that happened, I wasn't able to get it done in May of this year. So I'll still be 50, but I'm going to try to get the 13.9 one or two or however many miles a half marathon is. So that's kind of my goal.
Nice. Well, I'll be cheering you on, but there ain't no way I'm joining you because that sounds like torture, torture to me.
Well, I think this may be the first time other than with my wife, I've ever articulated it out loud. So now I have accountability.
Yeah. It's going to be on a podcast heard by hundreds of people, right? There you go.
Exactly.
So Justin Davis, not just a former Lincoln Christian University All-American basketball player, is our guest today. He's also an author. He's a pastor. He's a speaker. You have a new book called Being Real. I'm guessing this is how it's pronounced. Being Real, Greater Than Being Perfect. How Transparency Leads to Transformation. It released back in October. I want people to get this book, especially as you're thinking about the holidays and what's a good gift to get someone. This book... What was the reasoning behind writing this? Because, and I want to talk about your first book as well and kind of your story a little bit in a moment, but this is 10 years in the making, it feels like, between you've written two books, the first one with your wife, and it's 10 years between that book and the one that you have just released now. So tell us about what God was doing to feel like this is the time to write this book.
Man, Jason, that's a really loaded question. So as you know, we can get into my story, but my wife and I wrote a book called Beyond Ordinary. It came out in 2013, and it's really a story of our marriage imploding and the restoration that we found, and then 12 principles of how we, built an extraordinary marriage after the bottom falling out of what we call our first marriage. We were married for 10 years when everything imploded.
Yeah.
Well, as we started traveling and speaking and we started doing marriage conferences at churches all over the country, and people would come up to us, and even if we didn't do a marriage conference, we'd speak on a Sunday morning, we'd share a testimony, and we would share each Trish and I would share two principles. I would share one, she would share one. And I would say ordinary is defeated when we tell the truth. Hmm. And when we become honest with ourselves and God and our spouse. And then Trish would say ordinary is defeated when we choose to forgive. And so she would talk about forgiveness, and that's kind of how we would end our message. Then we'd go back to the book table, and people wouldn't talk to us necessarily. I would say I'm painting in broad strokes here, but I would say 80% of the comments were not about marriage. Hmm. They were about how did you guys change? Justin, how did you overcome your pornography addiction? How did you become a different person?
Yeah.
And so probably about after about 3 years, we had sold, as a first-time author, if you sell 5,000 copies of a book, that most publishers consider that a successful. We sold 7,000 copies in our first year, and we sold our book would be what's called evergreen. So it just continues to sell.
Yeah.
And so I went back to our publisher probably about 4 years after Beyond Ordinary came out, probably 2017. And I said, hey, I have an idea for another book. And it wasn't called Being Real is Greater Than Being Perfect at the time. It was called The Angel Complex and how we all try to take on basically wearing halos, pretending that we're better than we really are.
Yeah.
And it was this idea that people are trying to change, but their effort isn't producing the change they desire. So more people are going to church today than ever before, but very few are changing. And quite honestly, Jason, I got shot down. I submitted it to my agent, the book proposal.
Yeah.
And he's like, Justin, this is a $100,000 book. He's like, this is incredible. Mm-hmm. He's like, I cannot wait to shop this. 17 denials.
Wow.
And it was devastating. Like, it was like, okay, God, I thought you gave me this message. And so at the same time, that was all happening. We moved to Indianapolis. We were planting a new church. We had just adopted two kids. And so I just thought, well, maybe God, maybe I need to focus on what I got going on here rather than this book. And so I just kind of put it away. And through the course of the next like 5 years, so many trials and heartache and just absolute devastation kind of came into my life, not through my marriage, but just through a number of different circumstances that we can talk about. But So I began to pitch the book again with a different agent, different title. I kind of redid the interior aspect of the book. And David C. Cook said, man, we love this idea. And part of the reason was it's not a marriage book, right? And so everybody's looking in through their blinders of like, he's in the marriage lane. Yep. We can't produce a book that's not about marriage.
Yeah.
And so I was sharing this with my kids. We were kind of out in our back porch, and they were asking me if I was disappointed that, you know, it didn't come out 10 years ago or 5 years ago or whatever. And I'm a different person now. And the book is different now. The book is much more rich and much more grounded in biblical truth than I think it would have been 6 years ago, 5 years ago, because of all of the things that God walked with me through that allow me to guide people in a different way through this book now.
That's beautiful.
So I'm
said.
Trying to, yeah. I know it, I, at first I was kind of bitter, you know, like, what do you mean? Like, why, who cares if it's a marriage book? The truth of the message is real. But now I look back and I'm like, man, God needed me to go through those things so that I was prepared to share the message in a more authentic way.
Mm. Yeah. Again, the book is called Being Real is Greater Than Being Perfect, and it's out now. People can go get it. And it is different than your first book. But you're right. I think it's richer as I've been going through it, especially just even reading, I think it was the first chapter, and how you talk about your identity being stolen. And I'm thinking, yeah. Holy cow. And I understood the correlation of what you were trying to get, you know, about all of us are, I just spoke on identity at my church recently. And I kind of shared a story about how somebody else had the same exact name as me, but it wasn't me, but he was a major league baseball player. And I said, I want to be that guy. And right. There's this identity. People thought I was the major league baseball player. I said, no, I'm not. I'm not that Jason Romano. But your story of identity, I was like, holy cow. Like, this is like, everything, your livelihood was taken away from you guys.
Yeah. So we had just moved to start the church. We'd moved from Nashville, where we lived for 6 years, to Indianapolis to start a new church. And we'd been in town about 6 months. And when we were in Nashville, we had an assistant that did some work for us. And we had given her all of our passwords and all of our stuff. And she had it in her Dropbox. And her Dropbox got hacked. And so she had all of my, that the person in Bangladesh who stole my identity had all of my passwords and began to kind of basically creep in my Gmail account and just sit there and just watch different things. And so we had bought a house. And so I had another Dropbox folder with, you know, my license scanned and my tax returns. And this person got into my Dropbox, started all kinds of bank accounts in my name, took out credit cards in my name. Siphoned money out of our checking account, wiped out my kids' iPads and phones, like erased them.
Wow.
Demanding money. It was about 6 or 7 months. I would spend 10 to 15 hours a week just trying to put fires out that this person was starting. So yeah, it was a really traumatic experience. And one of, you know, when you get a certified letter from the State Department, it's a scary day. I'm like, what is going on? Why am I getting a certified letter from the United States State Department?
Yeah.
And it was basically, you know, identifying me. I went through the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. I talked to the FBI. I was deposed by the FBI about this. It was crazy. And then they, you know, kind of offered me some taxpayer money if I wanted counseling. So I, you know, it was, in the end, it was, you know, but thankfully it took about a year and a half, but we kind of got everything you know, reconciled and locked him, got him, he or she locked out of my identity. But it was, I use it as a kind of an illustration that there was a fake Justin Davis, but for the majority of my life growing up, I created fake people to try to impress God and try to impress others.
Yeah.
And I've had a different identity for different, you know, different circles that I've been in for years.
Well, let's go through that a little bit. Your identity in, I would imagine, sports was a big one growing up, because like I said, you know, we talked earlier, you know, you were a pretty good basketball player. So I have to imagine, and you can share kind of growing up in a Christian home or your story of faith as well. But I would imagine sports was a big identity theft, if you will, in your life.
Yeah. Well, I grew up really poor. My parents, were on food stamps, or my parents didn't own a house until I graduated from college. So I moved 13 times in like 11 years because we just would get kicked out of rental properties. And I'm the oldest of four kids, and my dad worked, but my mom stayed home, and we just didn't have a lot of money. And I grew up in a town of about 800 until I was 11 years old. And then we moved to a town of like 16,000. And when we moved, the income gap became very, very obvious. When I was living on a farm in this small town, everybody was kind of in the same socioeconomic, phase of life. And so when we moved, I was wearing Wrangler jeans and kids were wearing Guess jeans, and I was wearing cowboy boots and kids were wearing the new Nike Airs. And so there was this obvious, I was on the outside looking in, and I got bullied a lot. I got beat up a lot. I developed kind of a ulcers my freshman year of high, or my eighth grade year of junior high, because I was so anxious about going to school. I missed so much school my eighth grade year because I just did not want to get bullied. And I believed that sports was going to be a way out. And so I went out for the basketball team in seventh grade, got cut. Went out for the basketball team in eighth grade, got cut. Met with When I got cut in eighth grade, the varsity coach was a part of the cutting process. And he basically told me, "You're not a basketball player. I wouldn't even go out next year." And that just kind of motivated me. And I just spent that whole year just diving into plyometrics and eye-hand coordination and getting faster and getting stronger. And I made the team my freshman year, and my dad went to the school to see if I was kind of getting punked. Like, he didn't believe me because I had had such a bad experience. And I started as a freshman on the freshman A team, got moved up to JV about halfway through the year. It got really awkward my sophomore year because the varsity coach who told me not to go out was still the coach. But he moved me up to varsity my sophomore year, and I just kind of took off. But I had this belief that basketball was going to save me, right? I was a Christian, grew up in a Christian home, went to church, but basketball became God, and it became a way for me to hide my insecurity, a way for me to hide feeling inferior. I told myself, I'm never going to be told again that I don't want to, that I'm not good enough. And so this driving force, and I became a really arrogant person. I would talk trash. But it was all an act. It was all this fake persona to try to hide how desperate I was to fit in, how desperate I was to be popular, how desperate I was to be liked, and just this fear that if I'm not good at basketball, no one's going to like, I'm going to be bullied again. And so, yeah, there was this driving, force in my life to be successful and to be the best basketball player I could be. But looking back, man, I was not a good teammate because I wasn't really there for the team. I wanted to win, but I wanted me to win, even more than I wanted the team to win. And when I was at Lincoln, I mean, obviously it's small college basketball. We were really good. They were horrible before I got there. We went, 5 games over 500 my freshman year. And then my class specifically was just a great recruiting class, and we were really good. And I think if I would have been a better teammate, we would have gone a lot further than we did. But I just had that insecurity that was just driving me, and it would just come out in different ways. And what wouldn't allow me to love other people in an authentic way because I was being so inauthentic.
How did that transfer over? Because you got married pretty young. How did that transfer over into your marriage? And obviously, if people want to really go deep, and we'll talk about it, but if they want to really go deep, your book Beyond Ordinary, the first book you wrote with your wife, I mean, I read it 10 years ago, and I even recently said, "Can I get another copy of that?" Because I need to reread that at a different stage of life that I'm in my marriage than I was when I was reading it 10 years ago. You probably had some of that transfer over, I would imagine, that basketball mindset into this marriage that you had now entered into.
Yeah, Trish and I got married. It's weird even just thinking about it. We got married the summer before my second senior year of college. I went to Lincoln for 3 years and felt like I was too good for it. And so I transferred to Western Illinois University because I wanted to play Division I basketball. And I walked on, And at that time, you had to sit out a year. You know, there was no transfer portal.
Yeah.
No COVID and so years. Yeah, exactly.
And so
I wasn't able to play. I was just practicing and I was miserable. I made the team, but I was miserable in that environment. There was so much racism and so much hate on the team. It was just a very divisive environment. And so I transferred back to Lincoln after the first semester and sat out the rest of that year. And then Trish and I got married before my fifth year of college. And then 4 months into marriage, she found out she was pregnant. And so we're in college. I'm playing college basketball. We're married and she's pregnant. I mean, it was crazy. And I had this belief that if I could just try hard enough and be good enough, then then my marriage would be good, you know, and if I love God and love each other, it's going to go up and to the right. But looking back on it, Jason, I had this core fear that I was going to be alone, that nobody was ever going to be able to love me. And I'm not saying that I shouldn't have married Trish. I'm saying the motivation for why I wanted to get married so early. I loved her and I wanted to be with her the rest of my life, but that wasn't the core motivation. It was fear of being alone, fear of no one ever loving me, fear if anybody ever really knew me, they wouldn't love me. And so I think the insecurity that basketball extinguished as I became more and more successful is the same insecurity that I felt like Trish was going to solve. Well, you can't expect another human being to take away your insecurity. They can't take away your loneliness. They can't. That's something that only God can do. And I'm studying to be a pastor, right? I'm studying to go into ministry at this Bible college, excuse me. And yet I'm not looking to God for those things because I don't see God in that way. I see God as something, someone to serve, not someone to be in a relationship with really. And so I had these expectations of what Trish was going to provide or what our marriage was going to provide that were so unrealistic. You know, as a 21-year-old, I didn't know.
Right.
I was doing the best I could, but at the same time, looking back, you know, it was a pressure cooker of a lot of different things, so much brokenness that neither of us really acknowledged that we brought into our marriage relationship. And we just thought, well, if we love each other and love God, it's going to work out.
I think a lot of people think that, because it sounds right. It sounds like that's how it's supposed to be. Love God, yeah. Love each other, and everything will work out. But yet we're complex human beings who sin and who fall short and who have worldly desires and flesh that kind of kicks in. You mentioned kind of two marriages. Can you take us through briefly that first 10 years and maybe the rock bottom moment that allowed you to see, you know, the Lord in a completely different way and allow him to transform you?
Yeah. So that sense of accomplishment, that sense of approval, I really just kind of carried that right into ministry. Started doing youth ministry, and we would, I went to my first church was in Sandusky, Ohio, home of Tommy Boy. And, yes. We, you know, hit the ground running. I was 22 years old. Trisha had Micah, our oldest son, 3 months after we moved there. So, I mean, we're literally babies having babies at the time. But you know, the church ran about 150, and within 7 months we had a youth group of over 100 kids. Like it was just that sense of success. I was constantly driven for outwardly success. And so we moved from there. We moved to the Chicagoland area. Same thing. Grew the youth ministry. Moved to Indiana. Same thing. 300 kids in the youth ministry. And then we decided to plant a church for people who didn't go to church. This is in 2002. And that sense of drive and that sense of accomplishment, I mean, I was working 70, 80 hours a week, you know, out 4 or 5 nights a week, not only because I wanted to reach people for Christ. I did want to do that, but I took my own identity from the success or failure of the church plant that we were starting. And so the church took off. I mean, we launched with over 200 people in September of 2003. And by Easter of 2005, we were running 700. And this is, you know, before social media, this is,
right.
You know,
yeah.
We were meeting in a banquet hall. And I mean, looking back on those years, I mean, It was a, I mean, it was phenomenal. It was just, it was amazing. But there was, you know, all of these hidden parts of my heart, insecurity, sexual brokenness. I was struggling with pornography during that season, the first 10 years of our marriage that I'd never told anyone about.
Right.
And so, October 9th, 2005, I came home from church and told Trish that I was leaving her, that I wasn't in love with her anymore, that I was having an affair with her best friend who was also on staff at the church, and I wanted to be with her. And it wasn't a confession of remorse, and it wasn't a confession of repentance. It was just a confession of resignation.
Yeah.
And I think what happens at times in relationships is when you give to a relationship and you give and you give and you give and you don't think that something's being reciprocated, a sense of entitlement begins to live in your heart. And that person can never repay you all that you think they owe. And entitlement's three favorite words are "you owe me." And that's kind of the disposition I had in my marriage at that time. That Trish wasn't going to be the wife I felt like I deserved, and so I was done. And so she kicked me out of the house. I went and checked into a hotel, and as I arrived at the hotel, a lady at our church called, and she said, "If you have any hope at all of restoring your marriage, you're going to go to this counseling appointment that we've made for you tomorrow." And I just said, "Counseling? Psh, I don't go to counseling. I'm a pastor.
Right.
10 years, never one counseling appointment." And by God's grace, I went to this counseling session, and I was kind of going through this monologue of all the things that were wrong with my marriage. And the counselor's like, "Why are you even here? Like, what do you hope to accomplish in this counseling session?" And I said, "I want you to help me figure out how God's going to bless my life no matter who I choose. Like, that's what I want." And she said something in that moment, Jason, that became the linchpin of not only the restoration of my marriage, but really my ministry over the last 18 years. She said, "I can help broken people. I can't help hard-hearted people." And I'd
Wow.
been a pastor for 10 years. I'd been a Christian since I was 10 years old. I'd never experienced brokenness. But Trish and I didn't talk for the next 10 days. We were separated for 2.5 months. We had a mediator that helped. Our kids were 9, 6, and 3 at the time. We had a mediator that helped get our kids back and forth. And I started to feel broken from our marriage again. And I didn't know if I was going to get a second chance. And so I just started going to counseling by myself. And 10 days into our separation, Trisha called me on my cell phone. I tell people all the time, if the prodigal son's dad would have had a cell phone, this would have been a call he would have made. And she said, "I hear you've been going to counseling." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I'm willing to go with you." And so we started going to counseling together and went to counseling 4 days a week for the next 2 months. And that really began, that wasn't the finish line. That was really the starting line of a 2-year process of restoration. And I got out of ministry and became a headhunter, placing commercial bankers in banks, and never thought I was going to go back into ministry again. And then 4 years after the affair, a local church here in Indianapolis asked if we would share our testimony. And that really began the passion and the drive that we have to what we say is we go first, so that other people go second. Like, we lead with authenticity, we lead with transparency, so that other people feel permission to be honest about their wounds. My counselor said one time, he said, "You can't heal a wound you don't give a name to." And so I think that's kind of the heart of not only Beyond Ordinary, but that's the heart of my new book, Being Revealed is Greater Than Being Perfect, that so many of us spend so much time and effort and energy trying to be perfect and trying to prove that we're a person that we're really not, and that God longs to transform the parts of our heart that we're willing to give to him. That just like he doesn't force himself into our salvation, he won't force himself into our transformation. We have to be transparent. We have to be honest about our brokenness so that he can redeem it.
Thank you for sharing all that. There's a lot there, obviously. We could go for 2 more hours, and that's why I want people to get both of your books, because I think if they read Beyond Ordinary and then read Being Real is Greater Than Being Perfect, there's kind of this beautiful meshing together, even though they're different books, meshing together of this process over the last decade that you've walked through. One thing I was thinking through is you began to have the courage to share your testimony publicly. Because when you do that, you open yourself up, right? And there's a line, I think, right now in society between being transparent and real, but just oversharing and looking for lack of a better word, looking for attention or sympathy from people. Where is that line in today's culture? Because I'm with you in the sense that I believe when you share and be as transparent as you can with people and be as real as you can, that's where real work can get done. And yeah. You know, I tried to do that with my first book as well. When I wrote about forgiveness and my dad, I'm like, all right, we're going to be as open and transparent and real as possible. And then I had people say, why are you sharing such personal things in this book? And I said, the only reason I'm sharing it in my is the hope that others who are going through something similar would see that they're not alone. But then right. I really had to battle and make sure that, okay, if I'm talking about this or sharing this, please God, search my heart and make sure that it's not for attention or for people to yeah. just pat me on the back and give me hugs and say, oh, I'm so sorry you went through this. And that feels good too, because then, you know, you start right. to have these people care for you. So what's the line there of oversharing yeah. and still being transparent and real?
That's such a good question. It's something I actually address in the book, because I think there is this misconception, because we all have friends who are the oversharer on Facebook, right? Like they're, yes. they're like, you know, they have like a, you know, 7-paragraph post about all the calamity that's going on in their life. And you're like, oh,
and they share it every day. Today I'm yeah. going through this and I'm like, oh my gosh.
I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. So I think there is this perception that authenticity is oversharing. But one of the things, the principles that I outline in the book is that authenticity always starts privately before it's seen publicly.
Good.
That's right.
Good.
And yep. so if you, here's why I say this. I had a counseling session, about 2 years ago. I was going through a lot that we didn't even have time to get into, but I was going through a lot personally. I found out that my dad wasn't my dad, and my wife found out that her dad wasn't her dad within 6 days of each other through ancestry.com.
Wow.
So my life was turned upside down.
Yeah.
And I go to this counseling session and I'm talking through it with the counselor, and I said something about, yeah, and I shared this with the church on Sunday. I was speaking at our church. And he said, well, have you shared it with anybody one-on-one other than me? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you have a really unique ability to share your life and your heart with hundreds of people, but an inability to share your heart and your life with one person.
Wow.
And yeah. it was just this heart check of like, why do I want to be perceived as authentic on a stage and not be authentic in a relationship? And I said, well, I'm sharing it with you. He's like, yeah, but you're paying me. He's like, it doesn't count.
Right. Yeah.
And so like he kind of, the homework that he gave me was like, before you ever share some of these things publicly, you need to have private conversations. You need to work the muscle of private authenticity. He's like, you're authentic with your wife. You're authentic with your kids. He's like, but you don't have any friends. Like, why is that? Wow. You know? And so it was just this heart check, and it really began, I began to pray for opportunities, not to unload all of my trauma and drama onto a person, but God, give me a reciprocal relationship with an individual that I can do life with, that I can walk with, that I can be myself around, that I don't have to pour all this out on a stage. So, 'cause it is cathartic, right? James says, confess your sins to one another and pray for each other that you might be healed. So there is healing that comes when we're authentic.
Yes.
But I was using a megaphone rather than a cup of coffee, you know, for that authenticity. And I think that that's a false version of it.
Were you able
not false, but maybe definitely not as deep.
Yeah. Right. Definitely surface level in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you able to find that person, by the way, that person to be authentic with?
Yeah. And it's been a journey, right? You know, I see the meme sometimes that people post of Jesus, around the, you know, at the Last Supper. And it says one of the greatest miracles Jesus ever performed was having 12 close friends in his mid-30s.
Yes. I've seen that.
You yes. know what I mean? And so, you know, this as a 50-year-old, I think, we're not looking for new friends. You know, you're looking to get people out of your life, not into your life. And
yeah,
so it's one of those things where, you know, I have to be intentional. I have to make time. I have to schedule time. I have to say no to things. And so I had a buddy of mine, on Monday of this week, he texts me Monday morning. He's like, hey, can you do lunch? And he's one of my best friends. And I looked at my calendar and I'm like, I have lunch open, but it's like the only time I have open. I don't want to do lunch, but I'm like, yeah, I'd love to, you know? And we had such a really good conversation. He's going through some stuff with his kids. I'm going through some stuff with my kids. We were able to have a reciprocal, authentic conversation that I'm so, it's almost like going to the gym. I don't want to go to the gym. I'm really glad after I went to the gym. And I think that's how authentic friendship works sometimes.
That's good. That's good. For time purposes, I want to wrap this up very soon, but I do want to ask you about being a dad to kids who played sports at a decently high level. And just how are you as a dad to your sons, particularly who play basketball at the collegiate level, and knowing that you played, how are you, do you find yourself in coach mode? Did it take a little while to go from coach mode to dad mode to just cheerleader mode? What's that been like?
I wish I could have a do-over with my oldest son.
Yeah.
My oldest son.
He's the training ground, right? It's always training with the oldest.
Yeah. Yeah. But from a very young age, like 4 years old, you know, I thought he was going to be Steve Kerr. Like he had perfect form and, you know, he was a great shooter. And I put that pressure. I didn't know I was putting pressure on him. Right. But I was way more in coach mode, way more in performance mode with him than my last biological son, who he played at a really high level. He's a top 20 player in the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
And honestly, Jason, what really helped me was COVID, because when COVID happened, you know, only parents could be in the gym. We had to wear masks.
Yep.
And so if you were being a jerk, it was very obvious, right? Like,
because
there was like 20 people in the gym.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, a guy just really did a work in me during that time where I stopped yelling. I stopped, you know, even yelling at referees, which as a church league referee, I know you appreciate.
Listen, I'm guilty as charged with yelling at referees. Yeah. So I've been there. I know.
But I really kind of moved into this mode of like, man, my son only has 4 years of high school basketball and, you know, potentially 4 years of college basketball. I want him to have fun. I want it to be the best time of his life. I don't want him to feel the most pressure of his life.
Right.
Sports bring a pressure of their own. He doesn't need me putting that on him. And so it has been a journey. It is a journey. It's one of those things where I'm trying to, you know, what did you learn? I'm trying to have a growth mindset and not a performance mindset. Just for, but I feel like in, you know, for the parents out there that have kids playing sports, I feel like I should have my doctorate or honorary doctorate in sports psychology, after guiding two kids through high school and college basketball, just because of all of the mindset talks I've had. I'm like, I need to write a book on mindset.
Yes, completely. And I'll start calling you Dr. Justin Davis just because you went through that. Right.
Yeah. But I share a story in the book about Isaiah, and just, you know, he got recruited at a really high level. He had 12 full ride offers. He gets to college and he puts all this pressure on himself because he was a top recruit at this NAIA school. And he was playing as if he had to earn something. And I finally said to him, I said, you've already earned it. Play from a position of being accepted, not trying to earn acceptance. Mm. And that was, I feel like that was a full circle moment for me, because that was something I struggle with, not just in basketball, but in life. And to be able to kind of speak that into him, I felt like, man, I'm so grateful to have this conversation with him at 19, because it took me till I was 33.
Right.
34 years old to learn that.
Yeah, 100%. Now, your oldest is Micah, correct?
Yeah.
Now, yep. Am I wrong on this? I think I'm right on this. Doesn't he have a book coming out right around the same time as you have a book? What's he going does. On here? You guys are competing authors, you and your son.
So I want to share the story and set the record straight, because Micah had his book deal before me. Okay. He signed with our old publisher, Tyndale.
Yeah. He's a pastor. And let's make sure people know that, right?
Mike is a pastor. His church started September 24th.
Wow. Amazing.
First Sunday. He's planting a church called the Sanctuary Church. So he has this book deal called Trailblazers. His book's called Trailblazers, and it's phenomenal. It's supposed to come out in spring of 2024. That's what they tell him. So I signed my book deal. We signed a 2-book deal with David C. Cook. The first one is I'm writing by myself. And then the next one, Trisha and I are writing together, and it'll come out in 2025.
Nice.
So Micah's book is so good that Tyndale moves it up to come out in October of 2023. and so he's like, Dad, my book comes out October 17th. And I'm like, okay. He's like, can you help me promote it? I'm like, no, I can't. I'm going to promote my own book.
I got my own book. What are you talking about, son? That's so good.
And so I'm like, blame Tyndale for that.
Yes.
You know, so I am, we have a, you're going to be a guest on our podcast. And,
yes.
And we interviewed Micah a few days ago. And so his podcast is going to release on the day that his book comes out.
There you go. That's a good father. Good job.
Didn't even mention my book in the podcast.
Wow. Good job, Dad. Talk about conflicting, like, you know, you want to support your son and give yourself to your son, and you're like, but you also poured out your heart and soul for the last, sounds like, 7 years to get this book right out. So obviously, maybe we'll have Micah on, but I do want to have Justin Davis on before we have Micah Davis on. That's fair, right?
I appreciate
seniority,
that.
Seniority. Yeah, absolutely. You know? I knew him before even met, or knew you before I've even met him yet. So
that's right.
There
that's
you
right.
Go. There you go. Now that's funny. That's, I think that's amazing and hilarious and honestly really cool too. Like the fact that a father and son are both writing books and speaking and pastoring and just have a heart for the gospel and a heart for people. I think it's pretty cool. So good job, Dad. And good job on this book, my friend. It's really cool to have it out. I hope people go get it. Being Real, Greater Than Being Perfect, How Transparency Leads to Transformation. And he is Justin Davis. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for coming on the show. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
And many thanks to my friend Justin Davis for being our guest today on Sports Spectrum. It's always great when you can talk to a friend, somebody that I met, geez, a decade ago or so, when he wrote that first book, Beyond Ordinary. And that's a powerful book. If you are recently married, you've been married a while, you want your marriage to go from good to great, read Justin and Trisha Davis's story in Beyond Ordinary. It's a book that's still out there. You can get it on Amazon. And now Justin has a new book, Being Real, Greater Than Being Perfect. Love talking about that as well. It's also available on Amazon, and perfect time to get that right now before the holiday season for someone. And I love talking to Justin. I don't know why we haven't had him on earlier, but having a new book is always a great excuse to kind of bring your friend onto a podcast. And so I'm glad that we were able to talk. We will have his son, Micah, on at some point as well in the next few months. He's got a new book out too. But I love talking to Justin, 2 50-year-old dudes just trying to follow the Lord and do it the right way. And I really appreciate him sharing his story here today on Sports Spectrum. We thank you for tuning in as well. As always, we ask you to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Tell someone about Sports Spectrum. Be an ambassador for us by simply sharing this podcast with someone that you know and love that might want to hear about Justin Davis's story. He's walked through a lot the last few years. He's been through a lot, both personally and professionally, and yet he's still thriving. He's writing books. He's helping us all understand how to be transparent and be transformed. And so tell someone about Justin Davis. Let them know about this podcast and share it with them. And thank you again for pressing play, for making it all the way to the end of this podcast, if you're listening to this, and really just supporting Sports Spectrum. We love you guys so much. We thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time for another episode on the intersection of sports and faith. This is Sports Spectrum's podcast. We'll see you next time.